From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. President Bush made an unannounced visit to Iraq on Monday. He met with Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, local leaders, and U.S. troops.
I brought out the A-team so they could be with the folks who are making a significant difference in this war against these radicals and extremists. And Anbar, you're seeing firsthand the dramatic differences that can come when the Iraqis are more secure. In other words, you're seeing success.
America's top general there, David Petraeus, is on the verge of delivering a progress report to Congress. In recent days, Petraeus has hinted that he may recommend a troop reduction as early as March. With us to test the political winds, we've got Ron Christie. He's vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and a former special assistant to President George W. Bush, and Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. So welcome to you both, and let's just jump in, start with the president's trip to Anbar province. Now, this is a part of Iraq that has been touted as having lower fatalities. Overall, is Iraq more safe? Is this trip to Iraq one that highlights the best and avoids some of the other problems? Mary?
Overall, it's not more safer, according to reports that have come out this week. But it's good strategy on the part of the administration to shift the discussion from benchmarks to local control. It reminds me of when I was in Vietnam and we shifted the strategy to strategic hamlets where we're going to win the hearts and minds of local people and from the ground up have them work with us and give them weapons and have them tell us where the Viet Cong was. It's good political strategy. It's good photo op. When the military is there, they can secure the place where they are better, but the fatalities have gone up of Iraqis, the number of refugees, the ethnic cleansing that goes on. And even today and yesterday, Americans, men and women, are getting killed everywhere there. It's a tragic situation, but I don't blame the president for trying this initiative. It's already probably persuaded a few, even Democrats, that, you know, everything's getting better and now we can not worry about withdrawing. He's buying time and he's doing a good job of it.
Now, say that this Petraeus report does recommend a troop reduction. Is that going to signal progress on the ground, strain on the military, or is it a reaction to both?
He said it, well, Petraeus said it was strain on the military that was causing him to think about this, as well as better security in Anbar. The military, unless we expand its size exponentially, and there's a lot of talk about doing that, and unless we perhaps give even higher bonuses to recruits than the $20,000 we're now giving so that the Army can meet its recruiting goals, the military will have to draw down somewhat in April. But the president, as he has told a reporter recently who wrote a book about it at his release this week, is concerned about buying time to make sure that we can stay there and that the next president who comes in will be willing to stay there longer. And these strategies are all designed to do that.
Now, Ron, going to you, the president has lauded the progress in Anbar. Is this going to actually create a space where the Democrats can't really talk too much about what's going on there? Is this creating a new dynamic, not just on the ground in Iraq, but in the U.S. discussions?
Well, I think that Republicans and Democrats alike remain concerned of what's going on the ground in Iraq. But I do think that the Anbar province proves that there is a positive way ahead. What the president has said is that he's looking for progress from the bottom up. And again, having the Sunnis, having the Shia, and having the Kurds work together and to work in a collaborative fashion with the stability and with the infrastructure that the United States government, the United States military, has helped to provide. So I hope rather than Democrats attacking the president personally and finding fault with his strategy, I hope that both members of Congress from the Republican and the Democrat side of the aisle will find ways to work constructively with the administration so that we can reduce troops in Iraq and allow them to govern themselves in a safe and sovereign manner.
Ron, I want to stick with you, move on to a different topic. It is time for the Washington Bookshelf. And there's a new book, Dead Certain, The Presidency of George W. Bush, says that Karl Rove did not support Dick Cheney's nomination as vice president. And the author, Robert Draper, also quotes the president saying that when he leaves office, he needs to, quote, replenish the old coffers by making, quote, ridiculous money on the lecture circuit. Now, of course, you know, President Clinton right now is off making his own ridiculous money. And George Bush the first is off making his own ridiculous money, so it's not as if that's a ridiculous proposition. But Ron, do you believe that this is a form of candor that is going to change how people think about the Bush-Cheney White House, which everyone, well, many people at least assumed was like a chocolate and peanut butter situation?
I like the analogy. I don't think so, Farai. I have the book in front of me, and it's certainly the buzz in Washington and those in political circles. And the comment comes in the epilogue of the book where the author asked the president upon his reflections of what he might do when President Bush leaves office. And the first thing he said, actually, was he was interested in establishing a Freedom Institute to bring young leaders from around the world here to the United States. And then you get the comment of he's interested in going off and giving speeches. But what I would point out, and I think is important for your listeners to understand, is that in the prologue, not the epilogue of the book, but in the prologue of the book, the president talks extensively about how is Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, he is very concerned with what's going on in Iraq, and he's very concerned about sending young men and women into battle and what those consequences are. So, again, I think it's great that this book is out, but just taking a sentence out of context, I think it's important for folks to realize that in the beginning of the book, the president talks about his important role as Commander-in-Chief in protecting the American people and the armed forces.
Before we get back to you, Mary, Ron, you worked for the president and you worked for the vice president. Are they chocolate and peanut butter, or are they oil and water?
No, actually, I think you've got the chocolate and the peanut butter. I think that the mixture works quite well. Sitting in the Oval Office with both of them on numerous occasions, I can tell you that they have a very warm affection for each other. They have a very strong professional bond. But at the end of the day, for IMRI, there's no question who's in charge, and that's the President of the United States. And the Vice President is very deferential, very respectful in front of the President, but it's clear that they enjoy working with one another, and they have a ton of respect for each other.
Now, Mary, there's another bit in the book where the president talks about decision-making during wartime, and he is making an analogy to a young soldier. He says that if a kid thinks you're making a decision based on polls or something other than what you think is right or wrong based upon principles, then you're letting that kid down, and you're creating conditions for doubt, and you can't give a kid a gun and have him doubt whether or not the president thinks it's right. Does this bolster the president's legacy as someone who has followed his own intuition? You think it's right or wrong?
Well, first of all, the book, let me be clear, is not history. It's simply another PR move. It's good to have it, but historians will have to do real work to go out and find out what the real story is in the end. We'd like to have these pieces. But the president had a duty first to decide to not go into a war of choice where he put kids at risk. And as far as his legacy is concerned, it's not going to be based on whether on a day-to-day basis, once we were in the war, he thought he was right and that he was doing the right thing for the kid who was there getting killed or at risk of getting killed. It's about whether he should have done it in the first place, how he handled it, and the people around him handled it in the end, and what the results are. It's nice to know that he's principled, but that's not the whole story.
All right, got to move on to another hot topic. You have got Oprah Winfrey hosting a fundraiser for Barack Obama this weekend. There are all sorts of protocols, and we'll talk more about that at another time, but she might also be willing to go out and stump. Mary, if she hits the campaign trail, what could that do for presidential politics?
Well, a lot of people will come out to see her. They always do. Big crowds. We know Oprah can sell books. She's proven that better than anybody. She might as well control the publishing industry if she wants to. Endorsements usually don't matter much in politics unless it's some stunning thing where somebody who everybody thought was going to endorse you and they didn't. But her endorsement may count for more than others. She's not known as having any particular expertise about politics or governing or anything like that, but she has star power, and Obama should be happy to have her. And if she goes out, people will come out to see her. And there are some women who watch the show who apparently do everything Oprah says, but she's never told them really to do anything politically. So we'll just have to see.
What do you think, Ron? Do you think that it's a groundswell of a personality who has taken over America's airwaves that only extends to a certain point, or can it lap over the shores of politics?
I think it can lap over the shores of politics, and I think Mary is absolutely right. I think that there are a number of Americans, if Oprah decides to endorse a particular book or if Oprah gives her nod in a particular direction, you'll have thousands, if not millions, of people who will follow her lead. And I think in this particular case, with Oprah headlining a fundraising event for Mr. Obama and the prospect of having the senator having her out on the campaign trail, I think is huge. If given the choice of having Oprah at my side or against me, I would have her on my side any day of the week. And I think that she could, in fact, be a very, very formidable force in the political season that's upcoming.
So, Mary, you have got Magic Johnson working for Hillary Clinton. There's a certain universal appeal that Oprah has, and you point out especially white women are a strong base for her. Does Magic Johnson have that same kind of translatability, if that's even a word?
No, I don't know what Magic can sell. We like Magic, and he's nice, but he hasn't. I have known him to recommend that somebody buy something and have everybody trip over themselves to go out to buy it. So he doesn't have that, and there's nobody I can think of that has endorsed Senator Clinton so far, who has over star power, but nobody has it really. So this is sui generis. It's new, it's different, and so we'll just have to see. It's going to be interesting to see whether it translates into votes. But the votes are going to come first in the primaries. And the primaries are going to be in Iowa and New Hampshire and all those other places, depending on who squeezes in first with the squeezing going on. So we'll just have to see, but it's exciting.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. But next time, maybe we can talk about some celebrities stumping for the Republicans. How about that, Ron?
Hey, now, Farah, now you're talking.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Farah.
Thank you, Farah, Mary.
Ron Christie is vice president of the lobbying firm DC Navigators and a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. And Mary Frances Berry is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. And she spoke with us from NPR's Washington headquarters.